May it please the court, distinguished counsel, my name is Doug Bates and I'm here representing the interest of Utica Mutual Insurance Company. The issue before this court is Utica's position that the district court erred by holding that the Vigo defendants was relieved of their contractual obligations under a general agreement of indemnity. Utica argues that the trial court erred in reaching that conclusion by failing to confine the basis for determining if a novation occurred to the instrument which allegedly relieved the Vigo defendants of their obligations. Your Honor, Gerald Swarthout and Joanne's Cure testified to that, and the position that Utica takes with reference to that is that Mr. Piper's position within the company had changed, and when positions change, ownership was changing as well. And as a result, they wanted Mr. Piper's also to have his corporate representation on there as well. And when he did that, he put, it's true, he put his individual signature on. Perhaps. That's correct, Your Honor. That is our position. Well, to answer the judge's question, yes, that particular question, I did. I don't believe it does, Your Honor. And under the holdings of Downing versus Dow and Boswell versus Lyon, when you have a novation occur, then it has to be within the language determining whether or not there is language which creates the novation, as opposed to whom may have signed at a later point. First of all, Your Honor, with respect to that purchase agreement, it was clearly parole evidence. There's no way one can argue that that purchase agreement was part of any contract that Utica Mutual had. Utica Mutual was not a party to that at all. We didn't know about it. But to answer your question with respect to the effect of that purchase agreement, it was an attempt to replace bonds, clearly, that's what it says, an attempt to replace a bond and obtain a release. It was not signed by Susan Piper. It was signed by Mr. Piper and Mr. Schultes. I think that parties to that agreement recognized that to replace a bond may be hard, it may be difficult. I believe it does, Your Honor. She was an indemnitor under the 1991 GAI, and it takes the intent of all indemnitors to affect the novation. The language of the agreements are identical. Correct, Your Honor. Your Honor, we believe that the law in Indiana, with respect to novations involving the substitution of one party for another, is clear, and it requires more than that which the trial court based its decision upon. Correct, Your Honor. What that court did do, Your Honor, was recognize the distinction between the Boswell case and the Downing case that it's quoted right before it launched into its analysis of why it was going to rely upon the conduct of the party. And in that distinction, it said this case doesn't involve third parties, as Downing and Giles did. And we believe that that is a distinction, a major distinction in this matter. The Downing versus Dow case and the Boswell case both stand for the proposition that if there's a writing that is supposed to affect a novation, there should be language in that writing doing just that. That it should say, that allow some basis on which to find a conclusion that there was an ovation. The 1992 GAI, which the court said relieved the parties of their obligations, contained no such language. Therefore, we think it was error for the court to go beyond the 1992 GAI to find an ovation. Utica Mutual additionally argues that the trial court erred by failing to apply Indiana's special statute of frauds with respect to credit agreements. The 1992 GAI does not seem ambiguous. I don't think it is ambiguous. I think it stands for exactly what it does, which is add additional indemnitors to the mix. Your Honor's pointed out, and it is correct, that other people signed when perhaps they did not have to sign, but that in and of itself does not, within the language of that 1992 GAI, suggest that the 1992 GAI was to affect an ovation. Did that answer Your Honor's question? Okay. I'm sorry, Your Honor. Okay. With respect to the special statute of fraud, the Vigo defendants have suggested that somehow that because the 1991 GAI was not signed by all the parties, that it was not effective. A simple reading of the statute shows the fallacy of that argument, in that the language of the statute applies to agreements to change credit agreements. It is the agreement to change the credit agreement that must be in writing signed by all the parties. It's certainly not the credit agreement itself that has to be. Mortgages. I believe it's the indemnitors fit the definition of a debtor. Your Honor, we believe they fit into the definition of a debtor by seeking a credit agreement with Utica. Utica placed its credit, placed its money, its its finances on the line for a surety bond. Without Utica's backing, the Vigo defendants could not have obtained coal reclamation bonds. So they were relying upon Utica's... I'm defining the GAI as the... Yes. We do cite cases in our brief, Your Honor. I can't remember it off the top of my head. That does say, yes, Your Honor, it does say that they are credit agreements. I believe that is actually a case from Illinois applying a very similar statute. I think Illinois and Indiana both have situations which would allow you to go beyond the writing. I'm sorry. Thank you, Your Honor. But that has to be mistake, fraud, ambiguity. Those types of things allow you to go beyond the writing. That's not happened here. There's nothing that the court did not find an ambiguity. The court did not find mutual mistake. The court did not find fraud. And as a result, it was not allowed to go beyond the 1992 GAI. I see I'm in my rebuttal time. Thank you, Your Honor.
The 1992 GAI is not a standalone agreement. It didn't appear out of thin air, and it doesn't have the changes in signature just because. Your Honor's question begs the question.
No,
it begs the question of what was the contract?
No, it's not.
Why not? I respect
if the rule is that an ovation must stay approved. And the rule is that you have to look at the document, and in the document,
yes, Your Honor. And I will leave my first answer, as it obviously was insufficient. But I would beg the court to think about what the district court found the agreement was, and I'll come back to that. As to an ambiguity on... Well, I'll come back to that again then. Franklin versus White says in Indiana for the parole evidence rule to be applicable. Okay, I am trying not to duck them because.
No, you are trying to duck.
I will answer the question as to a novation contract has no special, novation contract law in Indiana has no special parole evidence rule applicable. Novation law under Indiana law is to be treated like any other contract. Downing and Boswell both stand for the proposition, Your Honor, that if I assign a contract, the word assignment without more does not relieve the assignor of his obligations under a contract. Classic law under the UCC. I assign something. As an assignor, I am not to be relieved. And they found the word assignment, both of those cases found the word assignment to be unambiguous. There is no such language in the 1992 GAI as to whether it is or is not a novation. I think it is unusual, Your Honor, to leave off Bigel Coal Company and the Kesters and include a new indemnitor, that being Schultheis, who is the purchaser, along with the additional new purchaser, that being the Pipers. It's their form. They have an old one going away, being replaced by a new one. The question being the difference in the signatories and leaving off the Vigo defendants. But I would put it to the court again that there was an application for this. How can what is being given in response to an application be considered without it? I will answer your question. I'm trying not to be, Your Honor. That is correct, Your Honor. That's what it says. To the extent that it is a second indemnity agreement, it is silent on whether it is additional or a new one. There is not a word on it that addresses either. I would answer His Honor's question again by the statement that Downing and Boswell are assignment cases, and the word assignment is unambiguous under Indiana case law. And a word assignment is unambiguous in that it says the assignor retains his liability unless there's something more. There's no principle of law applicable to a new indemnity contract. If you go back to Boswell, that's yes, Your Honor, it does. A Well, I think Winkler versus Reed, Roseacre Farms, both speak to it being express or implied. I would say it is a Winkler versus Reed is. Winkler versus Reed is clearly, but I would also state to the court that parole evidence in a contract case is admissible on the issue of whether the contract is an integrated contract and the complete expression, and that is so under Franklin versus White, that Indiana Supreme Court case. Now, if parole evidence rule is admissible to show that the 92 GAI was not an integrated agreement, we win, because it is uncontested by the parole evidence rule, Your Honors, that this was not an integrated agreement. It was not intended to be the complete and full expression of the parties upon the 92 transaction. And there is no law in Indiana that says Franklin versus White is not applicable to novation contracts. It's applicable to any type of a contract. And you have an application that proffers only two indemnitores, calls them new indemnitores, and then you have an acceptance by the bonding company through conversations with the two agents, and you have the issuance of a new indemnity agreement called a new indemnity agreement. All of those facts are parole, and they indicate that the 1992 GAI was not an independent standing agreement. And it left off the Vigo defendants, both of those points, creating ambiguity as to whether it was new or merely an additional agreement. Those two points, even ignoring whether it is or is not an integrated agreement, those two points create an ambiguity. Because otherwise, there's nothing but silence to run against it. And if silence runs against two other inferences, then an ambiguity. I think the district judge found the 92 transaction to be an agreement that the 1992 GAI was a part of, and that it was not an integrated agreement. And by the way, there is not a brief where the opposition raised the issue of parole evidence in front of the district court, and there's got to be 1,000 briefs. But in any event, reading the district court's opinion and crediting it, it is not, the district court's opinion never says, in the way he is writing his findings, he is clearly saying that the 92 GAI is not a standalone agreement. He is looking at industry practice to begin with, and what happens when you sell a coal company and you've got to do something with the bonds through the application on down to the conversations of accepting it. He resorted to extrinsic evidence to determine what the agreement of the parties was. And I beg to differ with Judge Posner, but you cannot apply the parole evidence rule on a point of silence until you determine that that document is the entirety of the agreement of the parties. That's not the parole evidence rule. The parole evidence rule first has to say, is the 92 GAI the total agreement of the parties? The trial court found it wasn't. And he resorted. No, he did not, in so many words. It wasn't raised by the other side. Matter of fact, there's not a word of parole in their whole brief before the trial court. But reading and giving his, and reading his findings, it is clear that what he was looking at was the entirety of the 92 transaction and finding that you had an application with a proffer of two indemnitores, new indemnitores, an acceptance by the bonding company of this, and then in response to that acceptance, the drafting of the 92 GAI leaving off. His facts did so, his conclusion of law did not state that that was what he was doing. But I think it's abundantly clear that when you read his findings, he's finding this 92 transaction to be the entire agreement of the parties. And this 92 GAI is not even the last act. And if you read there's a very interesting Sixth Circuit case that we cite. This is Sixth, it's Eighth, it's out of St. Louis. It's almost an all fours, and it went to the jury. And it's an indemnity agreement, reclamation bond, new indemnity agreement, and whether it was new or old replacement. Very similar. And I see the red light has come on. Thank you for your time.
Very brief, Your Honor. Rosick, the argument was made that the trial court must have found ambiguity to do what the trial court did. I suggest there's another reason. The court misinterpreted Rosick. And in the trial court in this matter didn't make that finding, Your Honor, that it was not an integrated contract. I think at one point the judge did ask me on closing whether there was an integration clause, and that's in the transcript. But he did not then go on and say that this was not, lacked an integration in his findings. But I didn't know. I couldn't remember at the time. It does not contain an integration clause in the contract. But that does not mean that the agreement was not complete on its face, the 1992 GAI. Again, and I harp back to Downing and versus Giles and Boswell, that when you look to determine whether the contract is complete on its face, you're determining whether or not there's any indication that that's what they intended to do, to find an ovation. And I think that those are the cases that are applicable. Secondly, with respect to integration, if the court had believed that, in fact, there were other documents that made up the contract between Utica and the Vigo defendants, the court still impermissibly looked at parole evidence by going back and looking at the purchase agreement, which was could no way be in part of our contract with anybody. We weren't a party to that contract. We weren't present during negotiations, and yet the court looked at it. If that is his theory, I can't agree with it. I think that the FIGO defendant's agreement with us was the 1991 GAI. The 1991 GAI was, I see I'm out of time, should I answer your question? Okay. The 1991 GAI was part of the complaint that we sued under to sue the VIGO defendants. We did because Charles Schultheis was on the 1992 GAI as well. Both were before the court to look at from the standpoint of what both agreements mean standing on their face, yes. We did sue Mr. Schultheis as well. Yes. Correct. Thank you, Your Honor.